Hello and welcome to the Dorothy Project. My name's Alice and each week I spend about 25 minutes getting to know another woman like me who's found herself feeling at home in gay male society. This week I'm talking to the singer and actor Nikki French. Nikki represented the UK at the Eurovision Song Contest back in the year 2000, but she's been performing in gay clubs since the very start of her career. I'm a massive Eurovision fan. In fact, what first prompted me to think about my life as a Dorothy and what it all means, the fact that the pop culture I'm interested in and the people I hang out with are predominantly gay men, was looking around the after party at Eurovision a couple of years ago and noticing that it might as well have been a gay club. So what is it about Eurovision, the music, the spectacle, that draws in so many gay men, as well as me and my fellow Dorothys? I asked Nikki when I spoke to her over the phone, and it was really interesting to get her perspective as a contestant, especially one who's become such an enthusiastic part of the Eurovision scene. Now, I was at the London Eurovision party a couple of years ago, and you know, you're definitely a face that the fans like to see.
Oh, that's kind. Thank you. Well, I mean, London Eurovision party night is my favourite night of the whole year. You know, I've said it a few times in the past, and it really is, because I'm very involved. I mean, of course I enjoy Eurovision itself, but being at the London party and being, you know, so sort of part of it, it's just my favourite night. You know, I don't even get paid. It's just, I just love it. It's just so much fun. And, and the fact that Kabir and Russell, who organise it all, they tell me, you know, well, you're going to be there every year because we can't have it without you type thing. So it's lovely.
And is that something that sort of evolved, or was it like a conscious thing? You know, once you were in the world of Eurovision, you were like, right, this is for me. I'm gonna stick around here.
Well, no. In actual fact, when I did my participation in Eurovision itself, afterwards, I had other people say to me, right, you've done it now. Just, you know, walk away. That's it. You're fine. And I didn't take their advice. I thought, no, it means more to me than that. I don't want to walk away from it. So I stayed very much a fan. I was invited to perform at various fan events over the next few years. And from that, I'd already become friends with Kabir, who actually lived near me at the time when I did Eurovision. He knew me, and I always go there really early in the day so that I can meet the artists, because I know, you know, a lot of them, it's their first big thing to be doing. So I like to go, I like to get the atmosphere, and there's been a couple of times where I've actually been asked for advice by the artists, which has been rather surreal, but I just love it. It's a really long day for me, but it's a great one, and I, you know, I now have this reputation of a tradition of having to change my frocks every couple of songs, so I do that as much as possible.
I love that. The first time I went, I was keeping count, and I think when it got to about the sixth outfit, I was just like, this is amazing.
Oh, there's many more than six, I can tell you. This year alone, it was, I mean, I just got to the end and I thought, I've just got enough outfits, and there were probably about 23 that I packed. So yeah, I just got in, which is great. But it's fun, you know. It's my little homage, I suppose, to it. But it's become part and parcel of it, and I love it. And I, as I say, I love meeting the artists, because it reminds me of the time when I was so excited to be representing my country, and you know, the big sort of, all the excitement around it, and these people, you know, they're getting that, and having London Eurovision, it's great, because the audience are so enthusiastic about every single one, even if they don't like the song or the country's, you know, sort of representation. They don't care. They sing along. They know every word, and they all know the artists. And quite often, the artists are blown away by the response because they're not expecting it.
I was going to ask you next, you know, when you said you kind of instantly felt like that was the world that you wanted to be part of, like, why? But you've kind of answered it partly, I think. Yeah.
Well, as a kiddie, I was, you know, I was always into Eurovision because I always wanted to be a singer. You know, it was even from being like 5, 6 years old, I wanted to be a singer. And my Olympics, if you like, was the Eurovision Song Contest. And so it was always a dream, and I used to love watching it. You know, I'd always been a fan. I absolutely love it.
And I guess one of the things you notice as well from, you know, for me anyway, from going to Eurovision, from going to the events, which is you kind of look around and you instantly realise what the demographic is, which is kind of it's pretty male and it's pretty gay. And is that a fan base that you kind of have consciously leaned into, whether that was before or after representing the UK?
No, I never consciously went into it. I mean, I was, you know, in my early years, I was working in sort of pubs and clubs and so on. And I started in a gay club in Shoreditch, the Spread Eagle in Shoreditch, I remember it was. And I worked there a couple of times. And it just kind of evolved from there. People were inviting me to perform at their gay pubs and clubs. And it just built and built and built. And before I knew it, I had, you know, a reasonable gay following. And then when Total Eclipse of the Heart was the big hit that it was in 1995, it kind of, I think the gay community sort of thought, she's ours, you know, she's been working on our scene, so she's ours type attitude. And I was quite happy to go with that, you know. And even at the time, my husband would come round with me. And so everyone knew, you know, we weren't gay at all, but, you know, I was accepted. I guess, you know, the gays love a strong singer. And the one thing I can say about myself is that, you know, my nickname, Foghorn French, is not for nothing. And it's, I've just always loved working in the gay community. I don't get hassled like I would in a, you know, in a straight club. The music tends to be more my sort of thing in the clubs that I work. You know, and I've got a loyalty from them now as well, which, you know, is something that you can't buy. You know, it's real, and I'm eternally grateful for it. So I am more than happy to carry on working in the gay clubs. You know, there's a few of us that, you know, we all work around the same circuit, and we've all got, you know, families and children and husbands and God knows what, but it doesn't matter. You know, when you're up there doing your thing, that your sexuality doesn't really matter. It's are these people going to have a good time? And by and large, I enjoy the shows in a gay club more than I do anywhere else. Although in Brazil, it's mainly a straight audience that I entertain there, and I love those. You know,
I was going to ask you about the different parts of the world and whether the fan base was different. So that's really interesting. And I know exactly what you mean about the types of music. That's definitely something. So I'm straight, but I DJ at the Vauxhall Tavern, and when I was...
Oh, do you?
Yeah. So,
oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, so I do push the button with Rob and James. And I think it is interesting, isn't it? What do you think is that kind of aesthetic? Because there is definitely a sort of sensibility, isn't there, to that kind of music?
Yeah, I think it's... I mean, someone once said, and I think, you know, there's a lot of truth in it, is that it's all to do with having fun and having a good time and not trying to... sort of like pose for people. I mean, of course there are posers in the gay clubs. Of course they are. They all want to look the best they can. But a lot of it is about just going out and having a damn good time. And a lot of my straight female friends much prefer going to a gay club to enjoy themselves and to dance because they like the music. You know, it's you get your handbag music. You also get the more groundbreaking stuff. You know, it's not that it's just purely, you know, wave your arms in the air handbag stuff. It's a complete mixture, but it's there for fun. And, you know, you don't tend to get fights like you would in, you know, just in a local pub even, with two straight guys trying to, you know, outdo each other or whatever. You know, the fighting is much more minimal with gay clubs, I find, anyway. Of course, there are problems. You all, you know, you're going to get that. But it's generally, people are just there to really enjoy themselves and you know, just let their hair down a bit.
Yeah, you're right. Do you know what? I hadn't really thought about it because I don't really go to straight clubs much anymore, but I don't think I've ever seen a fight in a gay club in all these years. So the song you released in 2014, This Love...
Oh, yes.
Was that kind of intended as a sort of anthem for the gay community, or was that just something that seems to have... Because it seems to have resonated with some of your gay following in
yes,
that kind of
respect. Yes, it definitely did. Yes, it became... I mean, I discovered that summer, it became a huge, like, gay anthem around the Pride circuit, which was amazing. It was wonderful. And now... quite often I'll be asked by the fans, are you singing This Love, rather than are you singing Total Eclipse of the Heart, or are you singing Don't Play That Song Again. I actually get asked for This Love more than any other now. When I recorded it with Mike Stock, I didn't realize at the time that he said to me weeks later, he said, well, you do realize it's a play on words, you know. The record company originally was Love This Records, so I've written a song called This Love to turn it round. But he then had this idea that it would be more towards embracing the gay side of it all, and you know, he planned the video to you know, sort of include a gay couple, you know, and all that. And it was, you know, the lyrics say it all about, you know, it doesn't matter. And these were Mike's words, actually, Mike Stock. You know, it doesn't matter what your sexual persuasion is, or your colour is, or your religion is. You know, if you find true love, that is the main thing. You know, that is what matters, you know, rather than anything else. And I think people embraced that, you know, straight and gay embraced that. And it's just such a lovely tune, and it's a lovely song. And I enjoy singing it as well. And I'm eternally grateful to Mike for writing it for me, because it was, you know, it really did. It just hit the, you know, it hit people just where it needed to, right at the right time, I think. At the moment, my commitment is with Energize Records, who, you know, they very quickly became very good friends of mine. And we sometimes forget, you know, we sometimes blur the lines between friendship and business. But, you know, they're so supportive of me. And, you know, because of that, I do the same back. You know, I show them loyalty because they show me loyalty.
Well, you've led on perfectly, because my next question was going to be, about Energize. And,
oh, okay.
So, I mean, they're a kind of, they've got a whole, I guess, kind of coterie of lots of different artists, you know, Hazel Dean, Rosala, Sonia, Sunita. Like, what's that been like, working as part of that kind of stable, I guess, over the years?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, I introduced some of the artists, Hazel I introduced to them. You know, they're so good, because they, you know, you're never going to make a fortune from working with a small label like Energize. And, you know, to be honest, there is no money in the recording side now anyway, really, unless you're someone like Beyonce or Madonna or whatever. But, you know, with single releases and album releases now, it's, you know, it's very difficult to actually make much profit. So they do things on a very, very small scale. However, it gets out to a lot of people, and they give the audience what the audience wants. You know, they worked that out about 10 years ago. They decided, right, we're just going to give people what they actually want, rather than try and take artists down different routes and so on. We will stick to what they're good at. And that has worked, you know, and it's great. And, I mean, I love working with them, because they have no problem with me being in the studio regularly. And, you know, I'm happy as a pig in muck, you know, because I'm constantly in the studio recording things. And then they also use me for other people's backing vocals, which I love. I mean, that's sort of my favourite thing, is to do backing vocals and harmonies and so on. I just love it. So Yeah, I'm kept nice and busy with Energize, and I love it. You know, I am a singer and I want to sing.
And it's funny, that's one of my favourite games, is like spotting people doing backing vocals on other artists' tracks. So I noticed that you actually played Ethel Merman, the Broadway star,
yes,
a few years ago. And I was like, oh my God, I need to talk to Nikki about that. So, yeah, how was that? How was the kind of process?
It was amazing. I mean, it was just a very, very small room. It was a theatre above the pub, really, up in Newcastle upon Tyne. And Steve, who wrote the piece, Steve Kane, he is now, it was Steve Burbridge at the time, he had worked with me on a couple of theatre things before, and he just had this idea of writing this show about Ethel Merman. Now, when he invited me to try out for it, I didn't really know much about Ethel Merman. I'd seen her on TV as a kiddie, and I knew the name, and I knew that she was this ballsy singer of yesteryear. But when I then went and bought some of her films to get her style and to get her mannerisms and things like that, and then I started looking at various interviews on YouTube and things, I fell in love. I just thought, oh my God, she's amazing. And it was such an honour to do this piece, because it was, originally we were going to have it as literally just a one-woman show, but I suggested that it would be more interesting to have it as kind of like an interview. So we turned it into a sort of like a Parkinson type show or whatever. And there was one guy, Chris, who was playing the interviewer, and we were back in sort of the 1970s. So we found all these outfits to go with that. I had a couple of outfits actually made specifically for that, for the show. We ran for about four nights, and I had to say the worst word in the world, I had to say right at the end, because it's one of her famous quotes about her ex-husband. And the whole thing was just so enjoyable to do. It was really, really hard work, and it really, really took your concentration, because, you know, you had nowhere to hide. When there's just two of you on the stage, there's nowhere to hide. You have to remember your lines. So it was a big, big ask, but I got through it and I really enjoyed it. And it got great reviews as well, which was even more satisfying. And there was a talk of taking it up to the Edinburgh Fringe, which is, again, never say never, but it hasn't yet happened. So I think it would need tweaking a bit, but it was a real joy to do, and definitely one of those sort of ticking boxes moments. Mm. You know, there are various shows that I'd love to be a part of, but I never would have thought that I'd do an Ethel Merman show and play her, but it just worked. It was just so enjoyable.
I think it's interesting, you know, what you were saying. It's sort of a bit like maybe what you were saying earlier about enjoying the music in gay clubs, and in the same way, those kind of iconic musical theatre roles that always also have that gay following.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, and if that's the, you know, if that's what you're drawn to as well as a performer, there's that kind of the link there too.
Yeah, although at Christmas I did do The Wizard of Oz, so I'm a definite friend of Dorothy. but I did The Wizard of Oz at Christmas time, and unfortunately I wasn't Dorothy, I was the Wicked Witch of the West. So, and every day I had to put lots and lots of green makeup on, which come the last show, I was so, so relieved to never have to put it on again.
And the other thing I guess I wanted to ask you was, you mentioned earlier, you know, there's this sort of gang of kind of the female artists that you know and you work with that have this kind of gay appeal. And one thing I'm asking everyone I interview is to nominate someone else, another kind of Dorothy that I should speak to. So who do you think I should speak to?
Sonia. Yeah, I mean, she'll have a lot to say now because she's just joined with Energize. She's a lovely, lovely lass.
All right. Well, I'll look her up then. That would be
great.
Try
for Sonia.
Yeah. I'll be collecting Eurovision entrants like Pokemon.
Yes. Yes. Or yes. If you want to move away from Eurovision, then go. I'd say Rosala. Rosala is such a lovely lady. I was actually in the studio with her and Gary from Energize just a couple of weeks ago. She was recording a new track for them, and it was phenomenal. Her voice sounds amazing. I'm in awe of her with her voice, because it's just effortless. When she's in the studio, she's effortless when she sings. It just, there's no bum notes, there's no, you know, nothing goes wrong. It's just, she just does it right.
Right, she's definitely going on the list then. Nikki's new EP of Eurovision covers, Let's Play That Song Again, is out now. And it includes a personal favourite of mine, Sergei Lazarev's 2016 entry for Russia, You Are the Only One. Eurovision is such an interesting one. On the one hand, it has the widest possible audience. 200 million people around the world watch it on telly every year. That's as mainstream as it gets. But when it comes to the really loyal fans, the ones who travel to watch the contest or who buy Nikki's music, you can't help but notice there are a lot of gay men. Pretty much the only Eurovision song I think I've ever heard in straight clubs is Gina G, which, to be fair, is a banger. Next week, I have an absolute treat. The actor Nicola Coughlan, who plays Claire, the wee lesbian, in Channel 4's smash hit sitcom Derry Girls. We talked about her campaigning for marriage equality in Ireland, both in the Republic and Northern Ireland, her friendship with Queer Eye's Jonathan Van Ness, I'm so jealous, and her love of drag queens. If you're not a fan of Nicola already, you will be after this. See you then.